Action. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Well, good morning and welcome to Education Nation. I am here with my co-host once again, Pete Hegseth, who's been out the last couple of weeks. So happy to have you back at my side again.
You know, Rebecca, and then I'm here with the host, Rebecca Hagstrom. You know, you didn't tell me. I thought I had a summer break. That's what I thought. This is Education Nation. We talk about education. The kids get a break. Why doesn't the co-host
get
a break?
Hey, we are hard driving here.
I guess.
On Education Nation.
Clearly
we have a lot
so.
To talk about. We there can't take a break.
You can't take a break. And as I know, you run Liberty Classical Academy. I know that, and my wife is involved as well working there. You guys, the work truly does never stop because you've got to be ready for the next year.
Absolutely right.
Improving, increasing the profile of the school and all of that. So always excited to be here on Education Nation. And it looks like we've got a pretty cool guest and topic today.
I'm very excited to introduce our guest. Her name is Annette Meeks, and she is the founder and CEO of the Freedom Foundation, an organization that develops and actively advocates the principles of individual freedom. We love that.
Mm-hmm.
Personal responsibility, we love that. Economic freedom, we love that. And limited government. We love that, too.
We sure do.
I think this is a good fit.
We do. And some of our listeners will know Annette from her work, obviously, at the Freedom Foundation. But you may also not know her background. Before founding that, she was the deputy chief of staff for Newt Gingrich, which he's one of the smartest men in politics.
Yes.
I don't know how one does that job. And then was also the lieutenant governor candidate with Tom Emmer in 2010.
Oh,
so
that's right.
A prominent name a lot of people will know and has been involved in conservative and education issues for many years. We're excited to have her on. Annette, thanks for joining us today.
Well, indeed, my honor. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on. Tell us a little bit more for our listeners about the Freedom Foundation, more generally speaking, and then maybe some of the work generally of why you're passionate about education in particular.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you. Our four founding principles are really what drive our work. We focus almost 80% of all of our work is aimed at the Minnesota legislature and policymakers at all levels of state government. So that's both city council, school boards, all of those. We have a lot of state government in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And so we focus trying to find market-based solutions for some of the toughest problems facing our state. And we focus a lot of time on education because education sucks up about 43% of our state budget, and that number seems to be increasing every 2 years. And more importantly, it is the one responsibility that our state has to every single future citizen, and that's to give them an equal and superior education. And we believe the state could do a little better job at providing that education to kids. So we try to promote successful things that are working in other states and ideas we come up with, all that good stuff, and all the while promoting government transparency.
Well, no, that's fantastic. What is your assessment, then, of the state of education in Minnesota? So if we're spending 43% of our state's budget increasing every year on education, how would you, if you had to define the state of education in Minnesota today for kids across the state, how would you define it?
Well, I would define it as being unequal and maybe unable to be graded at this time because, frankly, it depends on where that kid is enrolled in a public school.
Yeah.
We have schools all over the state that perform very, very well. And they send those kids, whether at 18 when they graduate, off to college or community college or even off to work, they prepare them well for life. Unfortunately, not every kid is fortunate to be in one of those schools. And those are the kids we're most concerned about, especially those kids that are trapped in failing schools, schools that by their own admission have failed to meet even bare minimum standards established by state and federal government. Those are the kids we're most concerned about because, as I like to tell folks, you don't get to do fourth grade over again.
Mm-hmm.
Either get that education you're supposed to get in fourth grade or you don't.
Yeah.
And that really prepares a lot of students for the future. And those are the kids we're worried about.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me as I listen to you speak, Annette. We're going to be doing a show next week on the St. Paul school system's equity issues, and I hear you talking about the schools that a student attends, it matters, and which ones are better and which ones are not. And I think it's interesting because I think you would hear people who would be in favor of all of St. Paul's equity policies saying the same thing as you, but maybe purporting that a different solution would be the answer. What do you think is the solution to these failing schools?
Well, it's interesting because the answer the legislature often comes up with is more money. And if more money were the solution over the last 20 years, we would have superior education for every single student because we have spent an inordinate amount of money in increased spending on trying to fix this persistent problem, especially in our core cities where we have schools that are abundantly failing every child. And the kids that are failing, like I said, they don't get another chance. This is their education, and we're failing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I were to look at the solutions are a multitude of solutions, but we do know what works. We know that a school that is run with a fair amount of independence, that has an effective teacher in every single classroom, that's the and that cares about that kid getting a good education. Those are the schools that succeed. Mm-hmm. It's not a measure of how much you spend per pupil. It's not a measure of where that school is located. And most importantly, every child can learn.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to succumb to what President Bush used to call the silent racism that some believe that some kids just aren't capable of learning. I refuse to believe that.
No, that's a great
point. Every child can.
He called it. He also called it the soft bigotry of low expectations. And and you're speaking to that specifically. You know, there was a piece of legislation pending in front of the legislature this year that would have expanded privately funded opportunity scholarships. Is why do you think that didn't move, since it had bipartisan support? Not to get into the weeds too much, but is that type of thing, opportunity scholarships, vouchers, choice options, is that how you open up the conversation even further, or empower families to go to those schools that have the right ingredients, whether it's a public school or a charter school or an independent or private school? Is more choice what we should be fighting for at this point?
Absolutely. Like I said, if you have a parent who, let me backtrack for a second. A lot of times parents aren't aware of how their schools are performing. And frankly, some schools vary from grade to grade.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important that you have a very effective teacher in every single classroom. And again, that's going to vary by your needs. Some schools have a severe need for more men to be teachers. Some have a need for, I went to a wonderful presentation by a very liberal group. A young student had recently graduated from a school on the east side, and she was a young Latina. And one of the things she said, it wasn't until she was in third or fourth grade that she had a teacher who looked like her. And so that's the other thing. We have a great deal of need for minority, and especially English language learners have a great deal of special needs as they enter our public schools. This is what our schools are so inflexible, because we have a teachers union that has got an ironclad fist guarding who has access to those teaching positions and who doesn't. As a matter of fact, there's a lawsuit working its way through the courts right now that talks about alternative teacher licensure, and that we should be promoting this as a way to get more diversity in our schools and promote folks who want to come as a second career to teach, to promote that opportunity. And instead, we have a state board of teaching that shuts down that opportunity and now is tied up in court. But but we have a great deal of needs, and we also have, we know what works. We know that, again, talk to any group of teachers in a school, and they will tell you if they have a bad apple teacher. If they're the fourth grade teacher, if they have a bad apple teacher teaching third, who maybe it's time for her to retire, they'll tell you that. The problem is there's absolutely nothing they can do to get rid of that teacher who maybe has lost their effectiveness, again, because we have a teachers union that refuses to accept any modicum of reform at all when it comes to teacher tenure. And so we keep teachers in a classroom that maybe shouldn't be there, that are past their educational prime, if you will, and that hurts students. So there's a lot of simple things we can do that other states have done and have seen amazing results. we drag our heels because we have a legislature that's beholden to the teachers union.
Mm-hmm. So I have a couple questions on that, Annette. You covered a lot of ground there in that last statement. But one of the things that stood out to me, too, is the have you heard about the Freedman? The woman from California, the teacher from California, that her case went all the way to the Supreme Court regarding paying dues to the union. Do you remember that case?
I do. Her name is Rebecca Fredericks.
There we go. Fredericks, not Freedman.
filed an amicus brief on her behalf. Unfortunately, it was a 4-4 decision, and the court ruled two weeks ago, that they will not reconsider that ruling.
Oh, so, really? They're not going to let it come back? I did not know that.
No, it is dead.
Oh.
And so we will need to start all over again at the trial court level with a new test. But what Ms. Fredericks was attempting to do is say that her First Amendment rights were violated by being forced to become a member of the union.
Right.
And she felt very strongly that because their political and lobbying activities so strongly conflicted with her personal views, she should not be forced because she lived in California, which is not a right-to-work state.
Mm-hmm.
She was forced to become a member of that union and pay them over $1,000 a year in dues.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to try another case.
Okay. And then another case that came out of California where there was a 501c3 that represented a group of students that were not getting a proper education in, I believe it was L.A. somewhere. I understood that same argument that won, because they did win their case in LA, and I believe that what that gave them is the ability to tell the unions that they do have to let poor teachers go more quickly than they would have through their original process, which I think was up to like a 6-year process. My understanding was that same argument was going to be brought to Minnesota. Have you heard anything about that?
It is. They filed the intent to file a case, I believe. I don't know that they've actually filed the lawsuit yet. But essentially what it was saying is every child under our state constitution has a right to an equal education, and that children who are enrolled in schools that have repeated failures in meeting state standards, they have a standing to fight this. I know they had a list of plaintiffs, but I don't know if they have filed their case yet. But yes, it is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to highlight really how some kids are trapped in failing schools, and that school choice is a wonderful option, but we need to make sure we have really strong public schools no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's what this will highlight.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, Annette, just mentioned a couple of court cases, but obviously this ends up being litigated politically in the public square and the court of public opinion. You mentioned the teachers' lobby. Education Minnesota is as powerful as any lobby this state has. The Democrats are in lockstep with them, yet our inner city public schools continue to disastrously fail underprivileged kids and low-income families who deserve a good opportunity and a good education. You've been a statewide candidate. You are a passionate supporter of education reform. Why haven't Republicans been more out front about making education a signature issue? Not even just Republicans, conservatives or reform-minded or independent. The number one issue that they argue to say, hey, if we're going to give an equal opportunity as opposed to an equal outcome to a kid, then we need to fix this education system and pin it to the chest of Democrats who continue to defend a failing status quo. Why doesn't that happen as much? There's so many contrasts that could be drawn at the legislature and the statewide level. And do you think there is an opportunity going forward to make that full-throated, unabashed case?
Wow. You just said that so well. let me go back to your first premise, Pete, which is that we have, why are they so powerful? And I'm speaking specifically of, we only have one union here in the state, and that's Education Minnesota. We're one of the few states that the two major teachers unions merged nearly 20 years ago. And so they are a monolithic lobbying force. But let me tell you why they're so powerful. Two things. Number one, they spend an inordinate amount of money each election year, which is money derived from forcibly collected from public school teachers.
Yeah.
That as a condition of having a job, you have to pay in some instances, $1,000 a year dues to Education Minnesota. Of that dues, roughly 25% of that is used for lobbying and for political campaigns. And then people always say, well, why do they prevail in elections? Let me tell you why. It's real simple. Last election, 2014, they spent nearly $4 million to make sure that, in their case, the DFL remained in control of the state legislature. And they didn't. They lost the state house. But that's a formidable tidal wave of money, $4 million. And let me tell you what happened. They ran out of money in end of September of 2014. What did they do? They went to a bank and took out a loan for nearly $700,000 that was for future dues collection. And of that $700,000, they wrote two checks, one to the state DFL party. They got $350,000, and a second check for the equal amount to the state DFL House Campaign Committee.
Wow.
That's how desperate they were to keep control of the legislature. And so what did they do? When they lost control of the state house but still had the state Senate, and, of course, Governor Dayton, who is their very best friend, interestingly, they didn't endorse him when he ran for governor the first time, but now he has learned to be their friend. This past year, 26 paid lobbyists up at the Capitol. I don't know any other organization, business, personal, certainly not our Education Choice Coalition, that has 26 paid lobbyists up there every day.
Wow.
Wow,
yeah, that's
incredible.
Powerful.
And so what on that Education Choice lobby, what's needed? More ammunition, more troops, fearless leader, you know, a willingness to take on the issue, confronting Education Minnesota directly. I mean, what is needed?
Mm-hmm. Two things. Number one, we cannot continue to be have any modicum of success if we allow them to divide us. And that is what they have done fairly effectively. We have our suburban parents who sometimes say, you know, don't get me involved in that fight. We have a good public school out here, and I don't really care what happens to your schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul, for example. That's a mistake. That's a mistake for conservatives. It's a mistake for us as citizens of our state. But more importantly, it's a mistake for anybody to think that any child who receives a failing education is going to be a success later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are we letting that child down on our moral responsibility that we have to that child, but more importantly, we're dooming them for the future. And so I believe it's just it's imperative as good citizens, we have to uphold that responsibility to every child in the state. And the other thing they have done very successfully is kind of what I call the urban-rural divide, whereas rural schools tend to not get involved in a lot of these fights. And again, we cannot allow them to divide us. We either have every child getting a superior education, or in my mind, no one is.
That's a great point. And our tax dollars from anywhere in the state are going to support schools that are still not failing kids in other parts of the state.
But I still think it comes back to leadership. I think that the conservative groups have not taken education on as a banner issue. They have failed to understand that K-12 education is what shapes the country, and it shapes politics of the future. And I think until conservatives really understand how key K-12 education is, I don't think we're going to have the kind of leadership that is necessary to really turn this tide.
Oh, that's a great point. You mentioned, and Annette, you mentioned citizens, which you're right. It's not just education for skill's sake. It's citizens of our state in our country. We're running out of time here. I want to, you mentioned you, just as a quick pivot, there's a couple of, you might have a new initiative going on. I know you can't say a whole lot about it, but you're doing a lot of great work in this space. Give us a sense of some of the stuff that's coming down the pike.
Well, one of the most important projects we've ever taken on at the Freedom Foundation, and by the way, it's Freedom Foundation of Minnesota, just spellitout.com, and you can sign up for our every 2 weeks. We don't spam people, but we have an opt-in email that goes out to anyone who signs up. It goes to about 10,000 citizens, journalists, other citizens of the state that are just concerned about good government, and we provide a brief update of what's happening, both state and federal, the issues that we think are of interest to conservatives. But this summer, we'll be starting to reach out to teachers, which is where I think the other mistake conservatives have made. Teachers are just good well-educated citizens like your next-door neighbor who want to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to become political pawns, and that's what we've turned them into.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great shame. And so we are reaching out to 75,000 public school teachers in the state of Minnesota to educate them about this issue and let them know that they have a friendly ally here at the Freedom Foundation, and we just want to help them not only learn their rights, but also what the future could be if we had an education system in the state, a K-12 education system that understood every child must succeed, and we're committed to making that happen.
Well, excellent, Annette. You are one of the conservatives that really are out there leading the way in this area of education. You understand the key importance of it, and you're taking action, and we are just so grateful to know what you've been actively pursuing there in your Freedom Foundation work. Thank you.
And I can vouch, there's no spamming. I get the email once a week. It's full of great content about what's going on at the Capitol and throughout Minnesota. Again, the website is freedomfoundationofminnesota.com, freedomfoundationofminnesota.com. Annette Meeks, thanks for leading the way. Thanks for joining us today, and keep up the fantastic work.
Yeah. Thank you, Annette.
Wow, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, take care. Well, great words from Annette Meeks, and we're going to turn around on the other side of this break and chat a little bit more about it, the implications of what Annette shared with us. So stick around on Education Nation. Welcome back. It is 10:53 on your KLBB Club 1220 dial. This is Education Nation. My name is Pete Hegseth, your humble co-host, but here with your true expert, the headmaster, Rebecca Hagstrom, the host of Education Nation and headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy. We just wrapped up a very insightful and interesting interview with Annette Meeks, who obviously understands these issues quite well. Rebecca, you're the expert on education here on this show. Give me some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, and I have many, but one of the things that really stood out to me as she was talking, we asked her specifically, what do you think some of the solutions are to the failing schools? And she listed two things that she thought were important. She said, first of all, independence and teachers that are effective in the classroom. And I thought, wow, both of those things are in very scarce supply right now because of all of the federal mandating that is happening through Common Core. So the independence piece, you know, we're hearing really all across the nation that our local school boards are becoming nothing more than just little rubber stamps to the bigger plans that are coming down from the state level and then actually from Washington. And even with the new ESEA legislation, where they were trying to give a little bit more local control in terms of education to the states, they still kept control through the way they are actually regulating the educational decisions that the states are making. So which tests are okay to use and what they need to prove through their tests. And so while the ESEA did give a little bit more latitude to the states, that independence piece is still not there. And so if we truly need independence, and we would believe that, you, Pete, and I, that local control is the best, that parents do know what's best for their kids. But that is not what we're seeing in the way education is being run today in this country.
Indeed. And independence also meaning that a principal or a headmaster can make decisions that affect their school, that affect their classroom.
Knowing what their students need.
Knowing who their good teachers are, reflecting the needs of the classroom. You know, hiring was one of the things, and credentialing was one of the things she talked about. Maybe respond to that and then a little bit of your own experience at Liberty as well.
Yeah, that was another piece that really stood out to me. She talked about the alternative legislation or the legislation for alternative licensure and how that's being stopped by the teachers' unions here and the whole educational establishment.
The teachers' union, which I want to keep going, but it's interesting. They merged. That's why Education Minnesota is so powerful. There's one teachers' union and it rules the roost.
Yes, anyway, you're right. Yes, it's singular, not plural. At any rate, the frustration with that is that they want every teacher to have to go through the system of having an education degree, regardless of how well qualified they are to teach in their field. So, for instance, at Liberty, when we start our sixth grade, that's when we enter middle school at our school, we're looking for teachers who are experts in their field. So we might hire somebody who has a history degree versus somebody who has a teaching degree, because we know that that person knows their subject. Same with science. We have a PhD teaching our science program in the middle school and in the high school level.
To me, that's an absolute no-brainer.
It is absolutely a no-brainer, and yet the education establishment doesn't want that because they haven't gone through. Because you know what? They haven't gotten all of the, in my opinion, kind of that soft training that they want to dictate to our teachers that they all kind of think alike.
Of course! Well, it's because, you know what Education Minnesota is? They're a cartel.
Yeah.
They're a cartel who wants to control who gets in and who gets out and where the money goes.
And what's
who
being
they elect,
taught.
And what's being taught and what, and they want no one to affect that. And they'll go so to the ends of the earth to protect against, let's say I wanted to teach sixth grade civics as a soldier, as a master's in public policy from an Ivy League school, as someone who's led advocacy organizations and efforts in Washington,
D.C. You'd
be a
highly qualified candidate in my at our school.
But not at a public school.
Right.
Because I don't check a certain number of boxes, and a principal isn't empowered to make that decision because they would want their kids to have
And the frustration with that, going back to Annette's second point of how she thinks we can solve the educational problem in Minnesota, is effective teachers. So for a guy like you, Pete, you know more about public policy and about the founding of our nation than probably the majority of social studies teachers in this nation.
I mean, there's a lot of great ones out there, but I'm not saying
there isn't, although I will say that our own history teacher, Mr. Button, the reason why he came into this field is because he had a very ineffective history social studies teacher.
I would
in
take
high school.
Mr. Button's course right now.
He's outstanding. And he does happen to have a teaching degree. But what he did to supplement that is he took a lot of history classes well beyond what he needed to do. And then when he got hired at Liberty, he did even more intense study so that he really knew his subject. And so what we are going to be requiring, or what we require at our school, is that the people really do know their subject area so that they can teach effectively.
Because as Annette said, the ingredients are not what isn't known.
Right.
It's independent, it's good teachers, it's high standards, it's, you know, all of the things that Liberty does that you've infused.
Right.
It's just there's roadblocks to that in so many quarters of our
education. Well, and we can train anybody how to write lesson plans and how to do classroom management, but we sure can't train them to know their subject. That is something that they have to learn on their own. We can require them to research and that type of thing. But that's why I think that the state is really missing the boat on this issue. Mm. They should be allowing the experts to come in and go ahead and teach. Especially, I think about all these wonderful people who have had successful careers out in the quote-unquote real world, if you want to call it that. And then they want to give back by going into teaching after they retire. They still have a lot to give.
Mm-hmm.
And to expect them to go back to school and to get a teaching degree is really ludicrous, and we're missing out on the huge benefits that they have to offer.
Amen. And that segue is why you have become truly a radio professional, because you mentioned classroom management and our educational environment, which leads us to what we're going to be talking about next Saturday.
Give
us a quick preview real
so
quick.
So next Saturday, we are going to be tackling all of the behavior issues that have inundated the St. Paul Public Schools and sort of what's at the core of that. All of our listeners, I'm sure, have been hearing in the news throughout the last several years. This is not just recent news, the last several years, about what is happening in the St. Paul Public Schools. And we're going to tackle what is at the core of that next week.
These things don't happen by accident. They're
a
result of different ingredients and different policies, enforcement or lack thereof.
Yes.
And we're going to dive into the details of what's going on with St. Paul Public Schools, as we do every week here on Education Nation, where we tackle the toughest topics. I'm Pete Hegseth. That's Rebecca Hagstrom.